The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Peter King. We have Mike Farron. We have Michael Fabiano. We have a jam-packed show for a Tuesday. Good stuff ahead on all fronts. Peter King will be first up. And, of course, the Cardinals and Packers. That's why I wanted to have Peter on. Football Morning in America is none better than Peter King from a national view of this matchup on Thursday. Mike Farron last week informed the Diamondbacks that he is no longer going to be part of the organization. He informed them that he is moving on. We are very saddened by this. Thought he was a terrific broadcaster, very entertaining, fun at play-by-play. And Mike is going to join us from Houston. He is down there. His other gig has been with Sirius and continues to be with SiriusXM, where he does their baseball channel and does very, very well at it. And then Michael Fabiano, I'm sure Fabs is just going to be in love with the slop that he saw last night, like all of us did in Seattle between the Seahawks and the Saints and all these quarterbacks that are beat up and Joe Flacco going back to the Jets. And, you know, I think we have to have a conversation that I'm not really comfortable with, but I know that many of you on the fantasy football front, you just care about your team. So Deshaun Watson, what is the strategy to be if you're going to go down that path with your fantasy football team? I mean, what he's off the field, what he's accused of is deplorable. But if the NFL says, no, he's going to be able to play, then it's like Kareem Hunt. It's just, do you not choose players because of their off-the-field conduct if the NFL allows them to play? So we'll get into that a little bit, along with some fantasy football stuff around the Cardinals with Devontae Adams. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their longtime support. So the Cardinals are a six-point favorite, and Green Bay will not have Devontae Adams, and I'm actually saddened by this. I am one of those that loves greatness. I am not one of those that says, oh, it's too bad that the late Kobe Bryant couldn't play against the Suns in a game. No, that's boy, we're really lucky that Kobe doesn't get to play tonight. You know, I'd hear that nonsense when it was injuries to star players over on basketball, and I hear it in football and baseball. And I'm one of those that's like, look, Devontae Adams is arguably one of the top 10 wide receivers in the league. And I would like Aaron Rodgers to have everything at his disposal. I am not a fan. There's just not a way around it. I never have been. I want to see greatness. I'm about great stories. I am about seeing greatness. And I want Aaron Rodgers to have his full complement of players, and he's not going to have that in all likelihood. So, you know, the thing with Adams is he tested positive for COVID-19. That means he's got to go into the protocol and have two negative tests in a 24-hour span before the game is on Thursday. So the clock is ticking. I would say that it is doubtful. If you sat through the Seahawks and Saints game last night, I had many of my guys were texting me saying the Eli and Peyton show was great, that they had more fun last night just screwing around. And that is the purpose. When there's a bad game, last night was a bad game. It just was. And unfortunately, I'm in a household where I was being held captive by my wife, who wanted just to hear the straight what was going on stuff between the Saints and the Seahawks. And, you know, 13-10, there you go. Knock yourself out. But I totally get, and I could have gone in my man cave, but I tried to be that guy that's with his wife. I totally get where they're going with Eli and Peyton. You know, there's trends that you see in sports coming from a mile away. And in broadcast, it is about, let's see what we can do differently on this. Back in the day, there was a silent broadcast. It was the Jets and the Dolphins. I think it was the late Don Olmeyer put it together. And they had no announcers at all. It was the silent bowl. Didn't go over well. And I get it. What Eli and Peyton are doing, and as I've watched that show, and when Charles Barkley shows up in a Raiders jersey, or I could hear Steve Levy and Louis Riddick and Brian Greasy chop up how the footwork is off of the quarterback, give me Charles all day long. That's it. And so it's meant for two different audiences. I would like to be entertained a little bit more. I don't need all the X's and O's. That's just me. And it depends on the magnitude of the game. You know, I don't want it to be screw around time and funsy zone when it's something of importance. Last night, it was in the rain, which they kept making a big deal out of. And Geno Smith as a quarterback in the NFL, it's just a struggle. It's just a struggle. And the offensive line of Seattle is just dreadful. Man, it's bad. Whew. So there's that. Arizona State and Washington State are Saturday. I had a lot of feedback yesterday from the ASU faithful on the Juan Roque segment that we did. I don't know if you saw it or not. It's up on the website. And I took the tack from Juan of, I'm not happy that they haven't been to the Rose Bowl in 25 years. And they're honoring that team from 97 this coming Friday. And then Saturday at the game itself. And so Juan was more on the line of, I could just tell, he kind of chuckled like, okay, Brad, here we go. And I wasn't there to pick a fight. I was just there simply to say, this is unacceptable. And he was like, you know, if they win out, and he did leave the proviso at the end that, you know, if things don't go their way, then we'll have that conversation at the end of the season. I get that, but as bad as they were at Utah, and as undisciplined as they were at Utah, and the meltdown at Utah, and they've had a week off, I know that there's people that are restless. It's out there. And so if you didn't get a chance to see it, it's up on the site. You can see that segment, the whole interview is over on the Podcast Center. So there's that. John Wilner wrote a column today that's up on the site that he is of the opinion the North, Pac-12 North, is going to come down to the Oregon State-Oregon game. It's a very well thought out read, and that's up on the site if you want to check it out at sports360az.com. World Series starts tonight, and that should be the lead item. In our country, baseball has tailed off so dramatically. I am one of those that says, you know, when people laugh and say there's only going to be 7 million, 8 million television sets that tune in to watch it, I don't know, 7, 8 million people are making an appointment, 2, 3, 4 people in those houses making an appointment. If you're one of those that likes to scoff at numbers and make numbers look any way you want, yeah, a regular season Cardinals game will get 10 million something. They'll get, if it's a national broadcast. Like the game this Thursday night against Green Bay is going to be a national broadcast. That's going to be 10, 12 million, maybe even more because it's the Packers. And I think there is curiosity around the Cardinals on a national space just because people haven't seen them. So here we are in World Series time, and it's the Astros, who most of America still hates, even though it's been 5 years. Even though I love Dusty Baker, Dusty Baker's tied all the way back to Henry Aaron. Dusty Baker was an Atlanta Brave at one time, before he was traded to the Dodgers. And so there's that side of it. And here's Dusty Baker managing the Giants into great success. And now here's Dusty Baker managing the Astros to great success. So I think that's a hell of a good story. And then you have Atlanta that has not been here since 1999, hard enough to believe, because we think back to, you know, Maddox and Smoltz and Glavin and all of them. And here they are finally back in the big dance. So tonight, Atlanta-Houston, game number one of the World Series. The Coyotes still haven't won a game. They lost again last night in Florida. I don't know if we need to do a death pool on that to start to put money down as to when the first win is going to come for them. They're 0-5-1, and they get an all-expense-paid day off today and tomorrow. I shouldn't say day off. They'll skate. But they were in Florida last night. They're in Tampa, staying in Florida. They'll be in Tampa for Thursday night's game. And the Suns are 1-2, and it's October 26th. So let's just breathe a little bit before we go down the fire hole on that one. All right? Peter King is next. Peter King, all things around Cardinals, Packers, his view of what's going on out here in Arizona. Then Mike Farron, he's leaving the Diamondbacks. Why? Where's he going? His view of the World Series. And Michael Fabiano on the Fantasy Football Focus. That's all straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat. As promised, Peter King, Football Morning in America, where we have an enormous game here on Thursday night. The Cardinals trying to remain a perfect move to a spot that they just haven't been in since 1974. I want to have Peter on board just to give his views, thoughts on the Cardinals, where they are, and then a little bit about the Packers. So let's just start with this team being undefeated, Peter, at this point of the season.
You know, Brad, what's so interesting about this team and you know, in my column this week, I wrote about the Cincinnati Bengals, and you almost you do a disservice to the larger team when you write about the bright, shiny object. which in Cincinnati is Joe Burrow right now. In Arizona, it's Kyler Murray. And the bright, shiny object is so good. We're almost halfway through this season. And Kyler Murray is completing 73.5%. And their offense is explosive and dynamic and so fun to watch. But you look at the other side of it. I mean, this is a team right now that's allowing 19 points a game.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got a reborn Marcus Golden. You've got J.J. Watt playing really well for an old man. And obviously Chandler Jones is doing Chandler Jones things. I think that the play on the other side of the ball has been so good and so, quite frankly, unexpected that is one of the things that really appeals to me.
There's a belief out here, Peter, that when Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson left, it actually opened up Kyler to be more of an assertive role and that he held back. I'm not in a locker room. None of us are with COVID going on. But some of the leaders being brought in, that Watt's been a terrific leader. Zach Ertz is a terrific locker room guy, and that was a big pickup for them from the people I've talked to over there. What do you see from a distance about the growth of the team? I'm just talking about the makeup of this squad, because you and I did talk about when JJ signed and Colt McCoy came in and AJ Green came in, it was a nice group of guys who were older. We didn't know if they had any gas left in the tank. And clearly, at least to this point of the season, they're getting production out of Green. They're getting production out of Watt. And McCoy has been a good ear for Kyler.
You know, I think you never know what's going to happen when two hugely respected guys, you know, leave the team and you remake the team a little bit. Mm-hmm. In some ways, the inference there, it kind of makes me sad, even though I understand that that's the way life goes. You know, we're all going to walk away from our jobs one day and someone else is going to step in. And I don't view that as something that's particularly sad. In this particular case, though, Larry Fitzgerald just sort of disappeared.
Poof.
And, you know, they never had the moment for Larry Fitzgerald. And one day, I'm sure the Cardinals will and the sports world will. But it's been so odd that he just sort of, he disappeared. I can't think of a better word for it. And there was no acknowledgement of the disappearance. And theoretically, you would think that Larry Fitzgerald might show up in somebody's locker room on December 18th, mm-hmm. for the stretch run. I mean, who knows? But I just think in the sports world, we want to wax poetic about certain guys who've been in a place for a long time. And in reality, that doesn't win games.
Yeah.
You know, it never has. And I think when you look at, let's just say, like a Larry Fitzgerald, and you look at the fact that last year, I think he averaged like 8 yards a catch. He just, you know, he wasn't the classic Larry Fitzgerald. So it was time. Everybody knew it was time. And you know, with Patrick Peterson, I thought, and who knows what the future holds in Minnesota, but I thought he would have one more kind of good run left in him, because he was so determined when I saw him in training camp this year. But, you know, who knows? We'll see. As far as where that leaves the Cardinals, in my opinion, young people always step up. You don't have any choice but to step up. And my feeling is, Kyler Murray always was going to be a different kind of leader than what you might normally see. He's the kind of leader that you say, essentially, like Derek Jeter was in a lot of ways, Derek Jeter was not a vocal leader. Derek Jeter was, you know, I'm going to work, watch me work, and I'm going to do everything for the good of the team, not necessarily for the good of Derek Jeter. And I think Kyler Murray, who I don't know well at all, has got some of that in him, that he's going to do stuff for the team more than he's going to do for Kyler Murray.
You brought up Marcus Golden's name earlier, and I think, you know, Steve Keim has been, the torches have been out and the pitchforks have been out on Steve. And now you turn around and you see Marcus Golden in an acquisition from the Giants last season. James Conner has been very productive out here so far. AJ Green's been very productive so far. And it's like Keim's got another life out here, because the fire Steve was like line number one through 10, if you're hosting a talk show. And now that line has dwindled because obviously they're having great success.
You know, guys who do that job, and there's no reason why a woman can't do that job, but people who do that job, essentially, when you think about it, are always, there's always going to be ebbs and flows. And particularly with the Cardinals, when you saw that they, for the most part of Keim's run, you know, starting, you know, when they acquired Carson Palmer, you know, if you look at the way Carson Palmer, you know, basically played, and, you know, the kind of leader and the great guy he was when he was in Arizona, and he's been that way wherever he's been. I just think you have to give the general manager a little credit when two quarterbacks who he's picked here have really worked out very, very well for the franchise. Because, look, as you know, Brad, Kyler Murray was not universally lauded as a can't-miss, you know, franchise quarterback. And he, and again, look, I mean, we got to give him some time, too. I mean,
it's
still very, very early.
Yeah,
it's still very, very early in his career. But I do think that you've got to give a general manager who takes a chance, I think, twice, both with Palmer and with Murray. Both of those have worked out. And you're right. A lot of his bit pieces, relatively speaking, are collectively a good reason why this team is 7-0. So I think whether he was ever in any serious trouble with Michael Bidwill, he certainly isn't now.
Yeah, it's nice to not talk about Josh Rosen or why they took Andy Isabella rather than DK Metcalf. And, I mean, you can point to that, to your point. Peter King with us, Football Morning in America. Before I get you out of here, just big picture, what do you make out of Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers coming here Thursday night? What are the Cardinals going to see from the Packers, your view of the Packers, and then just this game?
I think Green Bay is a very interesting team right now. I mean, first of all, you know, when you look at how they've played this year, I could make the argument that they've got a lot more in common with the Cardinals than they are dissimilar to the Cardinals. I mean, Brad, if you look at their last month, look at their last four games, and, you know, this team has given up 16 points a game, even though Za'Darius Smith has been out, probably their most valuable defensive player. Maybe their second most has been Jaire Alexander. He has missed much of the season as well. And, you know, they have played some good offensive teams very, very tough early on in this season. And so I think it's a little bit – what is interesting about this matchup, I think, is that you want to say, ooh, boy, this game could be 38-35. I think this game could be 23-19. You know, I mean, both defenses are playing well enough right now to sort of confound people who are going to say, well, look out, Aaron Rodgers, Kyler Murray, there's going to be 8 to 10 touchdown passes in this game. I really don't think so. I think that the defenses are both playing well enough so that I'm not saying it's going to be a pitcher's duel, but I think it could be different than we all think.
Appreciate your time and your insight. Stay well, stay in touch.
Thanks so much, Brad.
There's Peter King with us, Football Morning in America, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, Mike Farren is with us, Sirius XM, formerly with the Diamondbacks. This is not me speaking at a funeral, but I am really sad. I've been talking about this. What is going on with you? And here's what I said, and in all seriousness, when our mutual friend and when Pedro Gomez passed in January, in the Valley, there's nobody better than Mike Farren when it comes to talking baseball, because Mike, and I hear you on Sirius do your thing, and through the years, things that you've done that have just been tremendous. And I hear you wade your way through a season that's just awful, before and after, and every night, I never hear a guy mail it in, never. So you're leaving, and now you're at the World Series with Houston and Atlanta. So I want to take this interview a bunch of different ways, and I'm going to start just with the World Series first. All right, so what do you make out of this? These are the hated Houston Astros, vindication, redemption, I don't know. The Atlanta Braves haven't been there since 99. I'm pretty interested in this. What about you?
Yeah, I am too. I mean, I think if you're a fan of well-played baseball, I think you're going to enjoy this series a lot. I mean, there are a couple things that really stand out to me. First and foremost, Atlanta has excellent starting pitching. They haven't gotten it to the way that they anticipated. And for all the talk of the Dodgers injuries, and I don't want to discount what the Dodgers went through, you know, this season or what they went through specifically in the last round. Like, Atlanta has done this without their best player for half the season and the guy that was supposed to be their best pitcher the entire year. You know, Mike Soroka missed the entire season. Ronald Acuña Jr. got hurt right before the All-Star game. Yeah. This is a pretty incredible story. Both these teams have tremendous infield defense. Houston's offense, and I get, and I don't fault anybody who's still upset about what happened 4 years ago, but this is an exceptional offensive group that does not strike out. And they put the ball in play. They are really, really fun to watch. If you can divorce yourself from you know what happened in the past, they are an exciting team. And then you add to the fact that they have Dusty Baker managing them, who, for my money, should be, you know, I wish there was a category for the Hall of Fame. I haven't yet petitioned my former colleague Josh Rawitz, president of the Hall of Fame, to get some sort of category that is more all encompassing, kind of what they have in hockey or in football, but Dusty deserves to be in, you know, for his contributions as a player and a manager. And he's one of nine managers to ever get a team to the World Series in both leagues. And it's been, you know, 2002 was the last time he was there. So I think, and Brian Snitker on the other side is a lifer, right? Like, that guy started in the Braves organization in 1977 as a player, you know, plus his son is the assistant hitting coach for the Astros. So there's a lot of different stories. And I know, as somebody who appreciates baseball history, I think Henry Aaron looks over this series an awful lot too. You know, we lost Henry Aaron this winter. You know, he was obviously a monumental figure in Braves history, but the guy who was on deck when he hit number 715 is managing Houston. And just as another aside, you know, Henry Aaron took Dusty Baker under his wing when he was drafted, and he took another player under his wing too, Ralph Garr, who is still a scout for the Braves and was just named the Midwest Scout of the Year, which is a great career honor. So there's a lot of really cool storylines, I think, associated both on and off the field with what should be a fun series.
Were you surprised? I guess the better way to put it, if I would have said to you, we're chatting on opening day, it's going to be the Astros and Braves, would you have bought in on it?
Yeah, I think probably I would have. I mean, like, in the middle of the season, I don't know that I would have bought that with where Atlanta sat. I mean, they were, 44 and 45 at one point. So I think before the season, I could have seen a scenario where that played out. Sure. I mean, Atlanta was the odds-on favorite to win the National League East the entire time. We know how talented this Houston roster is, and they're getting kind of towards the end of this run. But they really have. I mean, this is their third pennant in 5 years. So, yeah, I absolutely could have seen a scenario before the season started. Now, if in if you had asked me before game four of the American League Championship Series, if I thought Houston was going to make the World Series, I'd have said there's no chance. Remember, I mean, they got, what, 6 2/3 innings out of their starters in the first four games. And it wasn't because it was strategic. It was because they didn't pitch well. And so the fact that they're here and that they were able to hold off Boston, completely shut down Boston's offense, really over the last three games of that series, I think is impressive.
It seems like they're always scoring 9 runs. Like the Astros are always putting up crooked numbers. It's really impressive what they've done, Mike.
And it's deep too. I mean, like you have the star power in, you know, Correa and Altuve, but Jordan Alvarez, who is the ALCS MVP, is just about as devastating a left-handed hitter as there is in the majors right now. And, you know, they've done it without really a healthy Alex Bregman. I mean, Bregman had been dealing with a quad injury for most of the year. And I know he homered in game four of the LCS, but it was kind of a pop fly homer. He really hasn't been driving the ball with authority. So one of their key bats is hampered. But they have, you know, the American League batting champion hit 7th in their lineup, Yuli Gurriel. Which I think speaks to how deep they are.
Mike Farron with us for a couple of minutes. You're leaving. Why?
It's just time. I mean, I appreciate the everything that the Diamondbacks organization did for me. And, you know, as I put out in the statement last week, you know, this was a great thrill. You know, there is, and I think I've probably shared the story with you before, Brad, that there was probably, this is going back 10 years now, Derek Hall was in our DC studios and he made an offhanded comment about, hey, when are you going to come work for me? And I was like, let me know and I'll be there. And so, you know, this was something, you know, I love the Valley. It's where I've always wanted to live. It has been a tremendous place to be. And I just think it's time for new challenges sometimes. You know, I'm in a position where, you know, I've had two jobs, which is really nice, in that, you know, I get to cover baseball. And so I'm going to kind of pursue what potentially could be out there for me. I don't know if anything will be, but I think it's just going to be, it's going to be time for a change. And I'm excited for the future and I'm excited for the Diamondbacks future as well.
When I heard you do games, let's just talk about that. You had a tone about you that was so much fun and so entertaining and so energetic for a product that was just not good. No other way to put it. Did you find your stride in doing play-by-play? I know a lot of guys, they get into the business and say, I'm going to be a talk show host, but deep down, I'm a play-by-play guy. I hear you, and it's like, wow, he's a play-by-play guy. And yeah, you can do talk shows. Did you find your stride doing that?
Well, I mean, I thank you for saying that, because that was always my dream, was to be a play-by-play announcer. And I hope that you know, I serve Diamondbacks fans well and the organization well in doing that. I love doing it. I mean, I get that the results on the field weren't what you want, but at the same time, like, if you're tuning into a baseball game on the radio, regardless of what your team's record is, you're looking for an escape from reality, right? Yeah. So you want to be entertained. And my hope is that we were able to do that as a group. You know, there was a lot of stuff that went on over the last 2 years that raised a lot of anxiety for people, you know? And so if you're tuning into a baseball game in an effort to try and forget about some of that, you know, I hope we were able to do that, that we were able to at least give you a little bit of a mental release. And in the end, Brad, it's baseball. It's supposed to be fun, right? Yeah. Like for all the things that go wrong in a season or getting caught up in the wins and losses. I mean, like, this is supposed to be fun. And I love baseball. I love baseball. So even when things aren't going well, you know, I'd still rather be watching a baseball game or calling a baseball game than anything else.
If I were driving around and you were doing a game, I would ask my wife, who's winning, who's losing? And she would say, I don't know. And I said, exactly. That is the mark of somebody who's got a lousy product that is just trying to get through it. And you would just sit there and find your way through other things that were comical and humorous. And I think the mark of a great play-by-play guy, Mike, is somebody that when they have a team that's not good, it's easy when the team's good. It's easy to see the Braves announcers hugging each other and all over each other and all that stuff. That's easy. But when you've got a team that's slogging through 100 losses, whew. And you just found your mark, I felt like.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think, you know, it's an entertainment product, right? This is something that baseball is struggling with at a much more existential level.
No question.
It's the entertainment product overall. Yep. And so, you know, I hope I can entertain an audience. I'm sure there are some people that didn't find me entertaining, and that's fine. I get it. To each their own. So like that, that's, it's just about, you know, I mean, again, trying to, and maybe it's because I was fortunate that, you know, my first job in a big market was working in Chicago and, you know, working at WGN Radio, there were some bad Cubs teams that I was working on the studio side for, and Pat Hughes and the late Ron Santo always made the broadcast interesting. You know, we started at some point marketing it as the Pat and Ron Show, and people would tune in because they wanted to hear them. They wanted to hear, you know, their enthusiasm, their humor, their, you know, you're spending 3 hours a day with people or more. So, you know, I appreciate that you picked up on that, because that's part of the goal, is to, you know, put together as entertaining a product as possible. How can you keep people around when the result isn't going to be what you want? I think that's a challenge that broadcasters struggle with. And I think that, to some degree, we've gotten away from it from the days of the over the last, you know, 20 years or so, from the days of the kind of the classic announcers who were, you know, more entertainer driven. You know, when you watch a guy now like Jason Benetti, who does, you know, ESPN and does the White Sox on television, like, that guy's a pure entertainer. And it's just, I mean, he's a fantastic baseball mind too, but it's just a lot of fun to watch him because he looks like he's having a great time and he sounds like he's having a great time. And, you know, you gravitate, I think, towards broadcasts like that because you want to be entertained.
I remember as a kid hearing Earl Weaver do interviews, people would interview Earl, and he would talk about his tomato patch down in the bullpen.
Oh yeah. The famous Chuck Thompson interview with him, with Alice Sweet, right?
Yeah. And I just thought, this is so cool. This is what it should be. You know, this isn't brain surgery. It's sports. It's fun.
Right.
The role of a post-game show that you would do, after the games were over with Steve Berthume and Greg Schulte and Leo and everybody roll in. I'm not taking this down a path of trying to be negative, but I'm taking down a path of, have those shows kind of outlived what they once were because of social media, because fans are just like, I'm going to go to a place where I want to hear what I want to hear, and I don't care what other people are going to say.
It's a really interesting question, and I would answer it two ways. I think, and this is just my opinion. I don't want to speak. I'm still a Diamondbacks employee for a few more months, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm you know, denigrating anything that we have done or anything like that, or anything we would do. I think that the standard post game show, the highlight show, the just play sound, the more utilitarian post-game show has certainly outlived its usefulness. Mm-hmm. And I think the same can be said for pregame. I mean, I think that there are things that we talked about over the years that we wanted to try and do to make it more modernized or personality driven. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that the Diamond Talk format, or as Steve likes to call it, Snake Talk, has outlived its usefulness. And the reason why is because I think it's like what you said before, it's more of an entertainment based show. It happens to be based around the game.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that there are, you know, certainly some, you can end up with a few more raw emotions in those post-game shows, where if you're coming off a particularly frustrating loss or a particularly frustrating stretch of games, that it's a little bit more real than what you would get in just your standard, like, here's the news, here are the highlights, here's the scoreboard. I think those actually have a significant amount of value. And I think it's one of the reasons why the Diamondbacks went to that model. I mean, the Giants have done it for years too, with their coffee clutch with the broadcasters. Yeah.
That's where it started.
And I think it's a much better process and has a chance to be a much more entertaining show than just what your standard post games are. So I think, you know, it always depends on the personalities that you have. You know, fortunately, I get to work with two guys who are great friends in Bert and Leo the last year. You know, we did all of them, and then we sprinkle in the great Rodrigo Lopez on Saturdays, and those were always, I don't know if you got a chance to hear Sabado Rodrigo at all, but Rodrigo's a gem, man. That guy's awesome. And so, like, you could have some fun and get some analysis and, you know, just remind yourself again that it's just flipping baseball, you know, like, and so I, So from that standpoint, I don't think that they've outlived their usefulness. In fact, I think that they're probably, I would like to see more teams and broadcast entities trend towards that conversation versus just having the place where you can pick up your highlights on the phone. Like you can get scores on the phone. Like that stuff, I think, has outlived its usefulness.
All right. Before I get you out of here, a couple other things. What can you say about behind the scenes in dealing with Torrey Lovello through all the stuff that he's had to go through, and maybe some other people within the organization are like, Brad, you know what? We don't talk about this guy or that guy much, but this guy, man, this guy helped me along the way quite a bit. Let's just start first with Torrey.
Well, I mean, you're not going to find a bigger fan of Torrey Lovello than me. And I was on another podcast a couple weeks ago talking about how I felt in a lot of respects he did his best managerial job. I think if you start to look at the way that he's evolved as a tactician, I think it gets obscured by the fact that they didn't have a very good bullpen this year.
Right.
But he was much more aggressive in offensive situations. You know, he's a very good communicator. He's exactly the kind of person that you would want to work for. You know, he's got a high level of care and give a damn for the people around him. And I just think, you know, it's one of the toughest conversations I had when I said that I wasn't going to return for 2022 was with Torrey, because he and I have built a pretty strong relationship over the last 5 years. And I have a lot of really warm feelings for him as a person. And I think he's a fine manager. I think he's a damn fine manager. I think he's just a great human being on top of all of it. And I love the character and the integrity that he shows. And so, like all of those things, I think are really laudable traits, and he's. I think people in the Valley are lucky to have him. I realize coming off a 110 loss season that it's there's a lot of you know pitchforks and torches for the manager, right? You want to see him go, but that's I think they made the absolute right decision in keeping him, and I think he's a great representative for the organization.
He can win here, Mike, in your opinion? He can win in Arizona?
I think so. I mean, I think you can win anywhere. I think that they've got a strong strengthening farm system. I think you're going to start to see those guys matriculate more to the big leagues over the course of the next year or two. I think he will have the resources. I think you're going to see. I mean, listen, it's not an easy division, right? The Dodgers are going to be good. The Giants are going to be good. But I think you absolutely can win here, and I think he can win here.
As you go out the door, what was your highlight on the air? Could have been a gay game that you remember, a moment that you remember, a show that you remember. What was your one highlight you take out? I was like, man, when I was in Arizona, I did this.
That's a really good question. I think probably the day that I mispronounced Tom Candiotti's name as I was throwing to him. I think we were in St. Petersburg, and I said something like, with Tom Candiotti, and of course he lost it, right? So like we couldn't control it. I think the mistakes and malaprops are probably the things that I will remember the most, because that's just because I'm an idiot. So
that's the way you're wired. What is next?
I don't know yet. I mean, I'm going to keep working it serious. Post? Yeah. I mean, my dream is still to do play by play and to do games.
Good.
And so my hope is that I'll get that opportunity, somewhere along the line. I don't know if that'll happen or not. I have a really, good other job at Sirius and have been there for nearly 15 years. And I'm on the road with those guys right now. So, I'll still be involved in baseball and doing, baseball content. And, we'll see where the road takes. I don't have anything that's lined up, but I'm excited for the potential of the future.
Chase your dream.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see whether or not I get that. I mean, I've had that opportunity. I've been able to live the dream to this point, right? I've been able to do what I always wanted to do. And I am forever grateful to the Diamondbacks for giving me that opportunity.
All right, get out of here. I know you have to go to work.
Well, I want to mention, too, that you mentioned people behind the scenes that deserve credit. I didn't get a chance to do that. So one name that comes to mind specifically is Roger Riley, who is the
clubhouse manager and the director of team travel. He's the greatest. I've known Roger since the Padre days. Just the greatest.
Roger Riley is one of the best who's ever done what he does. He's just a tremendous human being. I am eternally grateful to him, to the clubhouse staff there, you know, specifically Chad Chiffin, Lupe Uribe, Sean Moore. Those guys were incredible to me in helping just to take care of me and, you know, to make sure that I was standing in the right place, which is 90% of the battle. And, you know, and I have to thank my boss, too, Scott Geyer, who's the vice president of broadcasting, who Scott and I have a wonderful relationship. And you've known Scott for a long time, Brad. Yeah. You, in terms of high quality people, you're hard pressed to meet anyone that's quite like him. And that's just some of the behind the scene names. I mean, obviously, I'm thankful to, you know, Greg and Tom for the impact that they had on me, and for, you know, Leo's friendship and you know, his work as our producer engineer, Leo Gilmartin, and you know, so many people. It's almost a shame to leave out so many names. I could go down a list of 100, from graphic designers to, you know, to community relations, to PR, to all of these people that were extremely helpful and that mean a lot to me, because there are a number of people still in the Diamondbacks organization that I consider great friends and have been tremendous coworkers.
On to the next journey. Be brilliant. Enjoy the World Series. Thanks for the visit.
Thanks, Brad.
Here is Mike Farron. You can find him on Sirius XM. Does a great job there. And we're back with more after this timeout. Time now for the Hall of Famer. It is Michael Fabiano. I'm really interested to have Fabs on because Peter King said earlier that he expects a low-scoring Packers-Cardinals game, just his thought. It's going to be a defensive struggle. And with the news of Devontae Adams and fantasy football in play, you have to get the view from the Hall of Famer. And that is Michael Fabiano, Sirius XM, and of course, SI.com. All right, let's just start there. Devontae Adams' situation. Alan Lazard, he can't possibly do what Devontae Adams does. Are you expecting a low-scoring game yourself?
I mean, I don't know if I'm expecting a low-scoring game, right? I don't think this is going to be, you know, a barn burner. I don't think it's going to be 35-30. But I'm also not expecting a 14-10 game either. I mean, it's still Aaron Rodgers against Kyler Murray. And, you know, the Cardinals defense, you know, as good as it's been, you know, they're not a defense that doesn't give up points. Right. So and Green Bay's, you know, without Jair Alexander, they can give up some points, too. And the Cardinals have one of the most explosive offenses in the National Football League. So I could see, you know, a 24-21 type of game. It does stink that the Packers are not going to be at full strength. It hurts a lot of fantasy managers out there to have Devontae Adams most likely not being able to, eligible to play this week due to COVID. But Alan Lazard is going to be one of the most popular ads off the waiver wire this week. You know, had a good game last week. And Randall Cobb will be in the mix, too. And the Cardinals have been bad against wide receivers from a fantasy perspective. So the matchup's absolutely pretty favorable. So Lazard is one of those guys that you can, you know, potentially plug into your lineup and maybe, you know, he can get you 5 for 60 and a touchdown against Arizona. So, but the Kyler Murray, you know, he's been banged up as well. But that wide receiver core has been solid. Even AJ Green at an extended age, and you know, you bring in Zach Ertz. He has a touchdown last week as well. So, you know, they've got even more weapons in that offense. So it should be a fun game. It is a bummer though that Devontae Adams will not be a part of the festivities.
No, I agree with you on that. All right, so let's get into the mailbag, and let's because we have some questions are just very repetitive. Got a lot about James Robinson and what does Fabs think is going to happen with him. Got a trade, Tyreek for James Robinson and TJ Hockenson. Would Fabs make that deal? So let's go into James Robinson. What are you hearing? What are you thinking?
Well, unless I haven't heard something, James Robinson should be good to go for this week against Seattle, right? I mean, he's coming off a bye. Had been one of the top running backs in fantasy football before. So I'm not sure what the concern is unless there's some sort of injury.
Is he going to get traded? Are you?
Oh, I don't know about that. I actually haven't heard anything about James Robinson potentially being dealt. And why would Jacksonville trade him? I mean, they have Travis Etienne, I get it, but I guess they'd have to be blown away by a trade. And I don't know how much a team is going to offer for a running back. You know, I know he's good, but I don't know if the Jags are going to get enough in return to make a deal. If they do, well, that may not be good news for Robinson, but why would the Jags do that at this point? You know, this guy does not make a lot of money. He's in the second year of a rookie deal. Again, he wasn't drafted. That would seem strange to me for them to trade him. So assuming that does not happen, all things being equal, he is one of the, you know, 10 to 12 best running backs in fantasy football. They've got the Seahawks this week, and the Seahawks just gave up a boatload of points to Alvin Kamara. By the way, did you watch that game last night?
I did.
Was that not the worst game of the entire season?
There's been some bad football games this year. And we love watching the game. You have business. I have business off it. We want to see good games. But gosh almighty, there's times where I watch the product and say, man, all these injuries, all these guys going down, how are they going to get through the season? There was some low-grade dog food moments last night.
It was terrible. It was like watching a preseason game, honestly. Yeah. You know, it really was. Geno Smith is – I mean, you know, hey, listen. You know, I mean, I don't throw a football for a living. I know it's hard, but holy cow. I mean, he was terrible. Like, I mean, you know, this guy's a veteran. He's been in the league for a long time. It looked like he had, you know, the deer in the headlight moments a few times last night. I mean, there were some drives Seattle didn't even throw the ball. Why? Because they don't have trust in him. So I would say this about Seattle. The only guy you could start is DK right now. That's it. I mean, Alex Collins is in a committee now with Rashad Penny. You can't start anybody. Listen, and I'll tell you this. Forget about the names. We are 7 weeks into the National Football League season, 2021. Julio Jones should not be in your starting lineup. Allen Robinson should not be in your starting lineup. Robbie Anderson should not be in your starting lineup. Odell Beckham Jr. should only be in your starting lineup if you're really in trouble at the wide receiver position. Folks, these guys are not producing. Khalif Raymond is a better fantasy wide receiver than every single player I just mentioned. Right now, he's a better fantasy player. And because we get stuck on names,
yeah,
we continue to play these guys because we're so afraid that we're going to sit the player and that 1 week we sit him, he's going to go off. 7 weeks. It's not happening right now. Julio can't finish a game. Robinson, God bless him.
He is terrible.
Justin Fields looks terrible, and the offense is awful, and the line is just dreadful. I can't say enough bad things about the Bears. I'm surprised, you know, Khalil Herbert's been as good as he's been. Because they have big names doesn't mean they put up big production. Look at the numbers. Don't play these guys because of their names. I keep getting questions all the time. What do I do with Julio? What do I do with Allen Robinson? What do I do with Robbie Ann? Sit them. I mean, unless you have no depth whatsoever, sit them. They're not producing. Tyler Lockett, same thing, Brad. I can't play him. Like, Geno stinks. I can't play Tyler Lockett now. He's had two big games, the first two games of the season. He's been horrible since then. And it's not because of Lockett. Right? Lockett always goes into these, like, you know, three or four game stretches where he statistically goes into hibernation. But now you got Geno. I mean, they got the Jaguars this week, too. And Geno's just terrible. And the matchup's good. I still don't trust Lockett.
I love it when you're in full rant mode and your voice goes up two octaves. Like,
it's all about
how bad the product is.
It's not about like the name. You got to bench him. Like I get it. Like Khalif Raymond is not the sexiest name in fantasy football. Neither is Alan Lazard. I'd play both of those guys over the group that I just mentioned, even though they're the big names. I mean, I don't get it.
All right. So stay on rant mode here. Russell Gage from Tim and Peoria. What's Fab's thoughts on Russell Gage?
I don't trust him. He had a good game last week. I don't trust him. I wouldn't pick him up off the waiver wire. I mean, unless you're in a deeper league, they've got Carolina this week. Carolina's defense is not bad. They've been getting hammered because Sam Darnold suddenly is the Jets.
He's terrible.
He's terrible. And you know what? Terrible. This is why. And you know, we take shots at the NFL, and a lot of them are warranted. The game that we saw last night, the play that we saw from Sam Darnold and some other quarterbacks, I mean, Mike White is a quarterback who is starting in the National Football League in a week. Mike White, okay? This is why the NFL protects those quarterbacks to a fault, right, where guys barely touch them and they get flags thrown on them for unnecessary roughness. And some of the calls are a bunch of horse, you know what? This is why.
Okay.
If the NFL doesn't have these quarterbacks, their product is just garbage.
Okay. So take a breath. Because there's a lot here around the Cowboys. Michael Gallup is coming back. Andy and Chandler, and there's several other Cowboys or people that own Cowboy receivers and saying, what's Fab's strategy with Gallup? And are there enough footballs to go around in Big D?
If Gallup is out there, I'd pick him up. You know, you like to have parts of that offense, right? We used to say that about the Chiefs, not so much anymore, right? But Gallup is a guy that you should be adding if he's out there. And listen, there's a lot of mouths to feed. I get it. And we're going to find out if the return of Gallup means that Dalton Schultz's targets are going to start going down. We're not sure. We're going to find out, though. Gallup is a talented guy, and if he wasn't on the Cowboys, I'd say he'd probably be a pretty regular flex starter on another team that had a good quarterback. But the Cowboys just have so much depth, and they've got Zeke. The matchup this week is really good, though. I don't know if Gallup's going to be back. It's only Tuesday. But, I mean, Minnesota, that's going to be a shootout, man. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Kirk Cousins, whew, both those wide receivers in Minnesota against the Pokes. I mean, look at this right here.
Here he goes. Put it on.
Put it on.
Put it on.
I put the helmet on. I don't want to. I got an interview to do on video.
Oh, your hair is fine. Jeez.
I mean, you know, like it's there's not really, you know.
Come on. That's like me putting a helmet on. Come on.
You know, the whole Julius Caesar kind of thing. But, you know, if Gallup's out there, pick him up for sure. No okay. question.
Let me stick with bad quarterbacks because people are asking. They're asking. This isn't me. I'm just merely the messenger. Two words, yep. Joe Flacco.
Good luck. Those are my two words. Because Mike White's going to start this week. And, you know, if Mike White is awful, which he probably will be against the Bengals, you know, maybe they bring Flacco. I don't know. But no. This is what I'm talking about. My friend Dave Damashek. One of my good friends I used to work with at NFL Network, he said something one time on the air that like will always resonate with me. How many billions of people are on the planet Earth and you can't find 32 good players at the quarterback position on the planet? And now we're dipping into the backups. And listen, Jameis Winston's a backup quarterback. He should be a backup. He's not that good. Okay. No matter where he was drafted. Geno. You got Mike White this week. I mean, it's bad. You got Justin Fields, who should not be on a football field playing in the NFL. We all wanted the Bears to give him a chance. They did. He's not ready yet. So now you pull him out. You put Andy Dalton back in. You'll be good to go there. You're not starting any Bears receivers anyways at this point. So, you know, quarterback it's a tough position to fill. Maybe the toughest in terms of jobs in the entire world. You can't find 32 good ones at the same time. It's very hard.
Okay, another quarterback. This is from Marcus in Philadelphia. Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah,
that,
you know,
that Denver this
week. I didn't like him last week, and he scored 20 points, but like 9.5 of his points came as a runner. He rushed for 95 yards. Like, I mean, I never saw that coming. And this week's matchup against the Broncos is not great. I mean, their defense is a little bit banged up. I would say Heinicke's a 2 QB option right now. I wouldn't start him in traditional leagues.
Okay. A couple other questions I'll let you go on the mailbag. This was a trade earlier. Tyreek for James Robinson and TJ Hawkinson. This is from Russell in Peoria.
I don't want to trade Tyreek. Like, I get it. You know, his quad's a little flaring up a little bit. I mean, unless you're really jacked at wide receiver, and I don't know. I can't see a scenario where losing Tyreek doesn't hurt you significantly at wideout. I think you could do better. I mean, TJ Hawkinson, let's be honest, he had maybe two good games all year long. I mean, he hasn't been great. At a thin position, I think you could do better for Tyreek.
Troy in Denver, he loses Josh Jacobs this week. He has Alex Collins, Madison, Tony Pollard. I need help at free agent at running back. You actually need help on your roster at running back.
You do need help. So the Raiders are off. So picking up Peyton Barber is not going to do you any good. Or Kenyon Drake, who's probably owned already.
Yep.
Kenneth Gainwell. Maybe you pick him up because Miles Sanders is banged up.
Yep.
And Boston Scott will also be in the mix there as well. You can go out and get maybe a Brandon Bolden for New England, who had a really big game this past week against the Jets. They've got the Chargers this week. You can run on the Chargers. Backs can have success against that team. At running back, there's not a lot. And I don't know how competitive the league is either. There's not a whole heck of a lot to like.
If you have Alex Collins rostered, you're in trouble. You're in trouble.
Alex Collins is rostered in a lot of leagues. That's why it's really hard because there's no good running backs. Like last week, I had to play Kyle Juszczyk in two leagues. I got this from Kyle Juszczyk. This because Jamichael Hasty came back and took back the third down role, and Juszczyk didn't touch the ball barely. So, but now we're out of the whole Bimageddon thing. And now we've only got two teams on a bye. We got the Raiders and the Ravens this week. But there isn't a lot on the waiver wire running back. They're just that Gainwell's probably going to be, you know, your best bet. But then again, like I said, Brandon Bolden's also somebody that you can put in a claim for as well. Here's the intriguing one. Do you put in a claim for Deshaun Watson?
So, so I was going to ask you about that to finish this segment. Okay. And you and I both, this is a hard one for me to talk about a fantasy football situation for a dude that with all the stuff that's swirling around him out there, but there are people that do want to know, what do you think? And so, you know, it's out there. What is your strategy with Deshaun Watson?
Listen, do you guys play Kareem Hunt when he's healthy? There's video of Kareem Hunt kicking and hitting a woman. All right. Do you love when Joe Mixon scores a touchdown? There's video of Joe Mixon hitting a woman. Like, Deshaun Watson is what he's been accused of is terrible. And I get that it's a very sensitive subject. If Deshaun Watson is a starting quarterback in the National Football League and the league's going to allow him to play, people on fantasy teams are going to want to pick him up and play him. Bottom line, right or wrong, right? Kareem Hunt and Joe Mixon, listen, that stuff is no less dreadful, right, than what Deshaun Watson is accused of doing. And we play those guys, right? So, I mean, you can't be – I guess you can't be, you know, hypocritical about it. If you're going to go in on that direction, then you got to go all in, all right? You can't say that, oh, I love Kareem Hunt. He's so good on my fantasy team, and Joe Mixon this and that. Those guys have done some pretty horrible things, too, that are on video, right? So Deshaun Watson, if he gets traded, and it looks like there's a good chance he's going to get traded, and the NFL does not put him on the commissioner's exempt list, which doesn't look like it's going to happen because he's not been convicted of a crime, people will pick up Deshaun Watson and play him on their fantasy team, right or wrong. I get it. It's fantasy football. There are some very sensitive topics that go on, and it all is incorporated in fantasy, and I don't like to talk about it, but I have to. Watson's going to get picked up in leagues. It is what it is.
Okay, so the strategy, Michael, and I'll end with this. You and I are completely together on this. You know, I don't like talking about it, but it's going to happen. All right? Mm-hmm. So with that being said, waivers are today, tomorrow. Do you wait? Do you take a waiver claim this week and say, I'm going to get out in front of it? If it doesn't work out, I'm just going to drop him. Go down that path.
No, you have to put in a claim for him now if you want him. You have to. Because next week, the trade may have already happened, and then the rush to go pick him up will have already occurred. If you want Deshaun Watson, you got to pick him up now.
Yeah.
And look at the quarterbacks that are in the league right now. Geno Smith is a starting quarterback. Mike White is a starting quarterback. Jameis Winston is a starting quarterback. Jameis Winston is not that good. I don't care where he was drafted. He's never been that good. All right, folks. If you have a personal issue with Watson, and we all should, because what he's been accused of is horrible.
It's awful.
But it's all accusations right now. If you feel like Deshaun Watson is going to help your fantasy team and you can look past that, if you look past what Kareem Hunt did and what Joe Mixon did, and I'm sure there are others, pick them up. That's all I can tell you. That's all I can tell you. Right. If I'm in a league where my quarterback situation is not good, am I going to take a look at Deshaun Watson? I might, because if the league's going to let him play, then he's up for grabs just like every other player in the league. And there's a lot of players in this league that have had issues off the field, domestic violence and otherwise, and we have no problem playing them. Why is Deshaun Watson different? He hasn't been convicted of anything yet. And I'm not defending him, because the things that he's done, that he's allegedly done, are horrible and whether smoke just fire. I'm sure a lot of that is true. If the NFL is going to let him play, it's a personal decision. You want to pick him up and play him, or you don't? That's up to you.
Yeah. No, I think that's well put. We'll end off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right, my friend.
There's Michael Fabiano with us, and we're back with more after this timeout.